Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for listening. Very, very fun episode for me this week. Keith Hernandez, who calls Mets games locally on New York here on SNY, is the guest. And if you want to skip the first 20 minutes, 25 minutes of baseball talk and get right to the Seinfeld stuff, I don't have a problem if you do that, because Keith had some phenomenal stories from his one hour long Seinfeld episode, where he gave the great Keith Hernandez line. He talks about how that line came about and shares about three or four really great stories about Seinfeld, and also drops a bombshell. I'll do a little spoiler right here. He's not really seen many Seinfelds. So very interesting by Keith, since he had the best cameo on that show. Before we get to Keith, I just want to tell you that we've had some great episodes over the last several weeks with some great guests. Kyle Brandt from NFL Network was on last week. 2 weeks ago, John Oran from Sports Business Journal went through some sports media news. Jeff Van Gundy 3 weeks ago, Joe Buck 4 weeks ago. So if you've missed any of those, you can go into the SI Media podcast archives and listen to them. And if you can subscribe to the podcast, that would help tremendously. And reading and reviewing really does help too, but really just subscribe is all I'll beg for right now. All right. Keith Hernandez on baseball, Fernando Tatis, unwritten rules, and then we get into Seinfeld right now on the SI Media podcast. All right. Joining me now, excited for this one. I'm a fan of his broadcasting and, of course, is a diehard Seinfeld guy. Like, we'll get into that at some point. And all New Yorkers are fans of this guy, Keith Hernandez. Keith, how's it going?
I'm good, thank you. A little rainy day, a little chilly, but I got the next 2 days off so I can recharge my batteries after watching that four-hour game, the first game against the Marlins. That was that took out all the energy I had in my body. I need 48 hours.
I think one of the things that fans love about you is that you're not afraid to complain about your job, which, you know, when you're around something like sports, you know, I write about sports, you talk about sports, you know, people never want to hear us ever complain about our jobs. But if you're a human being and you have a boss, I think you automatically are allowed to complain about, you know, if you're not your own boss, you can complain about your job. So I love that sometimes we get the feeling that, you know, you may be rather, you know, at a restaurant at, you know, 9 o'clock at night than at Citi Field watching a long, boring Mets game.
Well, I don't complain about my job. I complain about the state of the game. Okay, what I have to watch sometimes. Right. That gets a little tiresome. But otherwise, it's okay. I'm good. I have no complaints.
What would you say, in your opinion, biggest problem with the game right now? If you said the state of the game.
Well, this is unusual right now with this COVID season. Right. It's a tryout camp, and you got expanded rosters. There's AAA players out there. It's not a major league product. It's very diluted, but it's not the fault of baseball overexpanding like they have in the past. It has to do with the pandemic. And it's good that they're getting a season going, and I think they're going to play it. By hook or crook, they're going to play the season, and I think that's good for the country. I'm happy about that there's baseball, even though it's not a top-notch product. Some of the teams and some of the players out there aren't major leaguers, but we can put up with that under these extraordinary circumstances. Yeah. So, but obviously, the length of the games are too much, but there's a lot of people that don't mind it. I'm just one that doesn't. Right. And I don't know, this the whole new mindset. There's a lot of 3-2 counts, a lot of walks, a lot of strikeouts. I think baseball got carried away and fell in love with the guy that can throw 100 miles an hour, doesn't know where it's going, doesn't know how to pitch. And now they're rediscovering that someone can throw 88 miles an hour, 90 miles an hour, and turn it over here, put a little extra there, take a little off here, and pop the inside there and get you out. And also pitching to contact. And it speeds up the game as opposed to a game with, you know, nine innings with two sides striking out 19 times total, eight walks. How many 3-2 counts, let alone, we don't even count the foul balls, the foul tips, the people staying the count. That, to me, is the main culprit of the game. And I don't want to sound like an old timer, but I think when hit pitchers, this is my experience, so I know, and I can, and I'm seeing it in today's game, and this is the radical change. And it's quoted in the paper, that's coming out of the players' mouths and coaches' mouths, is in our day, if you were 0-2, you're in a hole. I mean, you're still in a hole. You're 0-2 today. Pitchers would, okay, maybe waste a pitch, maybe a purpose pitch, and they come after you. They've got you behind the eight ball. I always felt that if I had an 0-2 count and I got that count to 2-2, I evened out that at bat, particularly with runners in scoring position. If I got it to 3-2, I thought I'd turn the tables on the pitcher. So pitchers today say they're 2-0. I didn't want to give in to the guy. So they throw secondary pitches, which the league now is a breaking ball league. I think analytics, which is a lot of good things in analytics, but analytics says that, you know, breaking balls and change-ups, hitters hit 220, 210 against them, so we're going to do that. Okay, what kind of breaking ball are you talking about? Can you throw that breaking ball with runners on first and second in the ninth inning or the eighth inning with the game on the line? Only the great ones can. They can still be done, and it is done today. But even in my day, it was the Tom Seavers, the Steve Carltons, the Don Suttons. They're all in the Hall of Fame, but there was a lot of pitchers that couldn't do it. They would throw you over breaking ball or a mediocre breaking ball, and major league hitters are going to feast on that. So that is an attitude that changes. So I see there's more teams, there's more pitchers. You know, in our day we had 10-man staffs. Now they have 12. But this year, of course, COVID, we're not counting COVID with
them. Yeah.
You know, if we just discard that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of diluted. Not everybody has a great bullpen. Most don't.
Right.
And people come in and fall behind, and there's real no purpose to their pitching, and I see it. And it kind of drives me crazy.
And it's also the use of the bullpen. I know early on in the pandemic when MLB Network or ESPN, whoever it was, they were showing older games when there was no programming, and I caught an old Yankee game, maybe it wasn't even on YES, and where Goose Gossage pitched like three. He was the closer, and he pitched like three innings to get a save.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, now, you know, even with the three-batter minimum, managers just – the time wasted on just the pitching changes alone is pretty wild compared to back in the day.
Well, it's just they're all managing by analytics, so you have a matchup, and you have all the data printed out. I mean, Whitey Herzog had that for me, and Davey Johnson. Whitey was the first manager I ever saw that would look at statistics. And, you know, they're much more sophisticated today. There's much more information to be harvested, and it is useful. But sometimes you got to go by your gut. I mean, I remember one time we were flying to Houston, and we had a night game, and we're in the middle of the night flying to Houston, which is a four-hour flight from New York. And Davey called me up into the first class where he was sitting, and he said, "I'm going to give you a rest tomorrow." And I said, "Why?" He goes, "Well, Ryan's pitching." And I go, "Okay." He goes, "Well, look." Well, my career at that point was probably around 10, 12 years, 12 years in. I had hit under 200 against Ryan. And I said, no. I walk a lot, and I've hurt Ryan. He's a tough pitcher, but I don't mind facing him. I mean, you want to give me a day off? Give me a day off against Nepper. And this is no slight to Ryan.
Right.
So Davey said to me, "Okay, I'll play you tomorrow." And lo and behold, I hit a 3-run home run off of Ryan in the seventh inning that beat him.
What did Davey say to you?
Oh, I just came to dugout and said, that "You can stick your statistics." And he laughed.
Yeah.
You know, but Davey's a guy that played with his gut. I mean, the playoff game in game six in Houston, when we're down 3-0 with Nepper throwing a 3-hit shutout, and we had a great bench. We had right-handers on the bench. And he pinch hit Lenny Dykstra to lead off the inning. And I remember in the dugout going, "What the hell's he doing?" And because Lenny hadn't become an accomplished hitter off left-handers at that point in his career. I think 86 was his first year. So what does Lenny do? He leads off with a triple. That wouldn't happen today, or get manager fired.
Right. Right. Well, how do you feel? You know, we're here in New York. I'm a Yankee fan. You know, obviously I see what's going on with the Mets. You know, my perception at least is that managers don't really manage. It's the GMs who are managing, who are, making the lineups. I think that's true here with both managers in New York. I think the managers here in New York, maybe it's different in other places, are here to basically manage the clubhouse and the media. Am I wrong on that?
You're partially right and partially wrong. There is a group of analytics people that help put the lineup together, and I think the manager, they all act in concert. Now, whether the manager has the final say or not, you know, the manager's boss is the general manager.
Right.
So, but I think the manager's in game. They do manage. I do think that they're given a game plan. They try to script a game, and you can't script a game. Like last night with Oswald out there, they weren't going to let him go third time through the order. I thought he was throwing pretty good.
Right.
He had one runner on with one out in the fifth. You know, you want to get five innings out, let him feel good about himself and finish the inning, you know. But nope, they were not going to let them see Oswald for the third time because they had already made their evaluation of Oswald, and they felt that he's the type of pitcher, third time through, the hitters are going to get him. We'll never know. But I thought it was the best I've ever seen Oswald throw.
Right.
And Ronnie made that comment in the booth during the game. Let him out there and let him finish the fifth inning and let him feel good about himself instead of having someone come in and clean it up for him.
Do you think that's the manager being afraid to leave him in and then getting in trouble with the GM? Because that's what
I think he's under orders.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to get in trouble.
Right, right.
But, I mean, Terry Collins always said that Sandy Alderson, Terry sometimes was old school, and he left the pitcher in longer than he was supposed to. Pitch counts back then. And Alderson would come down and just chew him out. Why'd you leave him in for the extra 15, 10 pitches? And
right.
Terry said he had good stuff. He was strong.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
So, you know, that's the kind of meddling that's going on today. And whether it's for good or bad, who knows. But
yeah.
Managers do manage in game. They just are given a script. And you know, it's never, heaven forbid, leave a right-hander in to face a left-hander late.
Right, exactly. Right. It doesn't matter what they're throwing or what they've been doing in the rest of the game. We mentioned the length of the game. You know, with the rules this year, with the crazy pandemic, that doubleheaders are only seven innings. There were rumblings about, you know, some people would say, let's do this permanently. How would you feel about that if they cut it to seven?
Seven innings?
Not for doubleheaders. I mean, every game.
To like, seven innings?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, game's too old. I agree. I could live with two minor leagues, two seven-inning games. I can live with that. That's not a big deal to me.
Right.
But the game's got to go nine. Come on. Yes. They got to be nine innings.
Yeah. The biggest story in baseball this week was the Fernando Tatis.
Right.
Unwritten rule.
Right.
Where I know you came out and defended the Rangers and Padres managers and thought Tatis was out of line.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't think he was out of line. The manager gave him the take sign. The manager was miffed at Tatis for not. Tatis knew he had to look down there. We played this game. He's from a baseball family. And, you know, I had a chance wonderful world of Twitter. Yeah. Everybody's been all over me, and I had to answer a few very respectfully. But, you know, thinking about it, and Gary made a good point last night, and so did Ron, when they disagreed with me, was that really, what is the threshold? And if, you know, I didn't know what happened. I don't read the sport pages. I never have read the sport pages. Even when I was a kid, I only read the AP stories, you know, Warren Spahn scattered 13 hits over nine innings and beat the San Francisco Giants 4-1 on his way to his 15th win. And I'd look at the box score. I never read articles. I find sports writing boring, and particularly game writing, I find very boring.
You should read my column. It's not boring.
Okay, well, I've not read you. I love The Athletic, but their columns are just like, they're like novellas. It's hard for me to stay focused. But what was the point we were talking
about? Tatis. You said Gary and Ron made a good point.
What is the run threshold? Right. Gary and Ron made a good point. Right. And the more I thought about it last night, long before I read Twitter in the morning, I mean, the only reason why I read Twitter is that I had my phone blew up with you got 500 and something responses in Twitter. Yes. Go check.
Twitter was 99% pro Tatis.
Yes. So looking back, eighth inning, seven runs, that's not insurmountable. So, okay, if it's 10-0, 9-0, 12-0, you got to take. Okay, I personally...
But I guess my question as a fan is, you know, if there's a threshold, if there's a limit, then why even continue with the rest of the game? I mean, why not just say,
well, that's okay, what Gary said, because you got to play the game, because everybody's, you got to have right, 9 innings. It's statistically, this right, game's over 100 years old. You got to complete the game.
And I know no one likes to hear this, especially fans, because fans don't like the fact that the players make so much money. But let's say, you know, Tatis, and I'm not saying this is what's going through his head at the moment, but let's say he takes the 3-0 pitch to strike. Let's say, you know, the next pitch he grounds out into a double play or whatever. I mean, you know, if players have incentives, he just lost 4 RBIs and a home run right there, and instead he's hitting into a double play. I mean, if you're going to put incentives, I think, into players' contracts, it's hard to tell them then not to play the game.
Well, also, too, you got to think about your teammate who got thrown out the next time up, the guy behind him.
Well, that's because the pitcher's a jerk, not because of the teammate.
No, everybody got pissed off on the other team because they felt that a line was crossed.
Right.
Now, my point is, having thought about it, I don't think 7 runs is insurmountable. If it's 10-0, okay, it's like someone also, I said on the air, if you steal a base with a 7-run lead, 8-run lead in the eighth inning and you're stealing bases, that's crossing the line.
Okay, and I guess my other counter to that would be, so Tatis there should take on 3-0, and then in the next half inning when the Rangers are up, are they allowed to try and score runs to come back?
Oh, because they're down, yeah. They're down.
So
it's just when you're up. It's just, I could give a shit about all this. I can really give a crap. Yeah. Everybody's getting all bent out of shape. I got an off day, you know. I haven't thought about this one time except when I looked at some of the Twitter and I answered this morning, and it's off my mind. You know what? It's yesterday's news. It'll be forgotten. So my point is this, and I want to make this clear.
Yeah.
Is that I'm thinking back over it. 7 runs may not be enough. Okay, it may not be enough. But if it's a 10-0 game, you don't do it. 9-0, eighth inning, you don't do it. That's just me.
Yeah. I think I don't want to speak for Twitter, but as someone who was on Tatis's side in the situation, I think...
I'm not against him.
No, I understand what you're saying. And I think what it ends up becoming is the Rangers get pissed off, his manager doesn't defend him, and it's like, here you have finally... You know, baseball lacks for stars and young players, and this guy is a massive talent, and he's been, I don't know, one of, if not the biggest story of the season. And now everyone's going to take a dump on the guy because he swung when it was 3-0. And, you know, I think that fueled the backlash. If it's another player, I think Twitter would still be pissed off because Twitter is always pissed off. But I don't think the defense of another player would have been as strong. Maybe if it was another hugely popular player. But, you know, I think Tatis... especially this year, and he's hitting bombs every night. I think people wanted to defend him for that, too.
Well, I'm not getting on him. I mean, he did not look for a take sign. That's his only thing he did wrong.
Right.
Was not look down for a take sign. And you got to look at your sign. The manager didn't want him to swing. So he disobeyed the manager, number one. Manager's the boss. The manager was obviously miffed about this, and that's what everybody got the evil eye, evidently. I didn't see it. And
well, he says he missed the sign. You don't buy that.
I don't know what he said. I haven't read the story.
He said he missed the sign.
I thought Gary said he didn't look.
Maybe he just didn't. Right.
I don't know. I know I'm third hand. But the main thing is there's plenty of stars in the game. There's a lot of good players in the game. Tatis is one of them. There's so much more PR today. You got MLB. What are you talking about? They never promoted the game like they promoted today when we played. And they had, or when Willie Mays played, when you had Mays and Aaron and Clemente on this, on the same field. So they are being promoted by MLB more than they're promoting their product.
Well, yes, I would say this. I love baseball. I'm a diehard Yankee fan. I love the sport. I think they do a lot of dumb things, like the blackouts on Saturdays, where, you know, if let's say the Mets are playing on Fox.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, and you're in another state, you can't watch.
Well, Fox pays a lot of money for that. It's all about follow the money.
Right. You know, they've been better about highlights on Twitter. They used to get Twitter accounts, you know, deleted if they posted a clip from a game. They've been better about it lately. I think they've missed a huge opportunity this year. Like we said at the beginning of this is not a real year. This is not a regular year. Everything is crazy. You have no fans in the stands. Put mics on every player. And I mean, we've seen so many great things when players are mic'd up. I mean, even with the ejections, you know, Strasburg, did you see Strasburg get ejected?
Yes, I did. It was against us.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And he's, you know, they picked it up when he said that was fucking brutal, and he tipped his cap to the umpire and he left. I mean, if we had those clips, would be going crazy 24/7 on Twitter if baseball wanted to. As a player, though, would you want to be mic'd up? Would you be okay? That players don't want to be mic'd up.
I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't want to be hindered in what you got to be careful what you say. You got kids watching. And I wouldn't want anything to obstruct my concentration on the 9-inning game. So I wouldn't do it.
What about, can we get it to like one player per game is mic'd up? You think they
can? I don't care. They can do whatever the hell they want.
No, but I'm saying in terms of you know, you want players to agree to this. You don't want to piss players. You know, you don't want to say to a player today, like, you have to be mic'd up.
Well, they don't have to do it unless they want to. I mean, Alonzo wants to be mic'd up.
Right.
I can live with that. It's fine. Yeah. I wouldn't.
Right.
I don't like it.
Right.
But it has entertainment value. I appreciate that. So yeah. I haven't got an issue with it. The world's changing, you know. I'm 68 years old. You know, it's a new world now. It's a whole new younger generation.
Yeah, I think fans just want as much inside stuff as they can get. So that's why I'm a big. You know, there was a video. I don't know if you saw it. There was a video that went, I mean, crazy viral 2 or 3 years ago, but it was an older video of Terry Collins.
Yeah.
After Syndergaard got thrown at me, and we got that expression that I had never heard before about your ass is in the jackpot. Fans ate that video up more than anything I've seen from Major League Baseball in the last few years. So that's why to me, if baseball wants to promote the game, give us more of everyone mic'd up. That's sort of my.
I don't have an issue with that.
Yeah. So I want to get into these unwritten rules because this is also a big thing now. Tell me this, because the Tatis thing is sort of like it's an unwritten rule. If you're up that many runs, 3-0, you take the pitch. Is there any chance, especially because you said things are so different now? So here we are. Tatis is so young. Is there a chance that some players just don't know the unwritten rules? Or does everyone, if you're in the major leagues, you know them? What?
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't think players today, we're in an information age where I can look up Tris Speaker on Baseball Reference. It's at my fingertips, and within as long as it takes me to type Tris Speaker, I can get his entire – I can get game by game.
Yeah.
Box scores. It's incredible. And a lot of players are not knowledgeable on baseball history. A lot of players don't know who the hell I am. That's fine. But, you know, I grew up with – you know, it's more of verbal lore. I mean, my dad's generation in the Depression, there was no television. Mm-hmm. They had to listen on the radio. It was Babe Ruth. Well, my dad grew up in San Francisco. Babe Ruth's way over in New York. Lou Gehrig. But that adds to the myth, you know, of baseball. And I think with the information age we're in now, you can watch every game. That's what I think it's hurting the stardom of the game. It's too much out there. It's too easy. You can watch. I mean, I got the MLB package.
Right.
I can watch any game I want. I don't. Mm-hmm. Right. But I can watch any game. Anybody that wants that can, and you can watch if you're a hometown fan. You can watch the Yankees every night. I only got to watch, you know, the Giants when they played the three-game series three times in Dodger Stadium when I was a kid.
Right.
And then the Saturday game of the week.
Right.
So I think overexposure is a good thing, but it has its downside. I think that you've lost kind of the I can't think of the right word, but I think that's why it's become too familiar and it's hurt the stardom of the game, the great players in today's game. And there are a lot of wonderful players in today's game.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's hurt. I mean, Mike Trout, we don't hear about Mike Trout out here.
Never.
And he's the best player on the planet.
Right. Right.
And, you know, he's like today's Willie Mays and you don't hear anything about him out here.
Yeah.
So it's overexposure.
Right. I mean, I wanted to get into sort of the unwritten rules and, you know, the players today, you know, they just might not care about the unwritten rules. It's a totally different generation.
May not.
Yeah.
May not.
How did it become where, you know, if you hit a home run and you flip the bat, that's sort of a crime? Like,
when you hit a home run, you got your ass around the bases. You never showed up a pitcher. But they don't throw at anybody anymore. And is that a good thing? I never liked headhunters.
But is it showing up a pitcher or is it just having a little fun?
Oh, I think it's a whole – in my generation, it would be showing up a pitcher. Asking for trouble. Today,
today it's having fun.
But
your generation
– also their ESPN moment too.
Yeah. Okay, but your generation had some – I mean, nobody flipped a bat like Ricky Henderson.
Ricky was one of the ones that began it, yes.
And nobody threw – it didn't seem like people threw it.
Reggie, that started that stuff.
Yeah.
Back in the 70s.
Right.
It's progressed. There was no ESPN. Right. I remember ESPN would go to the ball. I was in New York playing for the Mets in the 80s, and they had Australian football on in the afternoon while you're having lunch. There was no programming on ESPN.
Do you think another thing that's changed? I know this. I feel like this is true of other sports. I don't know about baseball. You could really shed light on it for me. I feel like back in your day, the teams didn't sort of, they weren't all friends and all hang out and all like, now the players today, I mean, especially in other sports, you know, you see it in the NBA, LeBron James is friends with Dwayne Wade, Chris Paul. So in baseball, I think some guy hits a home run, throws the bat 50 feet. I don't think he's trying to show up a pitcher. I think he's just having fun, celebrating. And I don't think the pitcher necessarily is mad. I think it's sort of like he's supposed to be mad because it's so ridiculous. Who's getting mad about a stupid bat flip? I mean, it's really, you got to have bigger problems to worry about.
Well, it's just acceptable now. That's all there is to it. We've just advanced to the point where in my day you didn't do it. And now it just gradually chipped away. And, you know, I see it now and I sit there and I'll just go, okay. And nothing happens. And I'd always was just say, well, God, if he did that to this guy, next time up, you'd get one in your ribs. But you
know. Yeah, I don't understand that logic. I just don't get it. Well, you hit a home run and throw a bat, so someone should throw a baseball at your ass. I don't get that logic.
Well, we don't have that. You should be happy. Yeah. You should be happy. We don't have that anymore. I would love to hit today. No one's going to throw at me today. No one's going to knock me. I can go with Acuna had that great run 2 years ago. He had 8 home runs in a row, whatever. And no one ever threw at him. And I got a lot of flack because someone finally hit him.
Right.
And guess what? He didn't hit a home run the rest of that series.
So that was a big thing with the Red Sox and Yankees a few years ago is that the Red Sox were always hitting Yankee batters. The Yankees never retaliated. And as a Yankee fan, I just said, I don't understand what the point of retaliating is. Are the Red Sox going to stop throwing at Yankee batters? No. I mean, you're just going to keep going and going.
It's the same thing, too. I never charged the mound. So a pitcher hit me, and I knew when they hit me on purpose. And that's part of the game. You know, I'm red hot. They want to send a message, fine. But I always said, okay, well, I'm going to get you the rest of the year, and particularly this game. That's how I'm going to get even. I get even with my bat.
Right. What do you think about pitchers, Joe Kelly, Dodgers, other pitchers are going to do it, throwing at Astros batters after the cheating scandal. Do you think that's a way they should handle it? Or, and not, we're not talking about headhunting, obviously, because
Well, not everybody. It's not frequent now, is it? I mean, I haven't been following.
I think they're still going to get plunked here and there. But the Joe Kelly thing ended up being a big deal because he threw at people's heads two times in a row.
Basically. Yeah, and I never, headhunting is not where it's at.
Right.
I mean, you can hurt someone. It's okay. And, really, you know, all the base runners, I know I played with Lou Brock, he got pissed if they threw at his ankles. And there were some mean pitchers out there that would throw at his knees and ankles. And that's where he made his living. And
right.
That's the only time Lou was the easiest going guy in the world. That's the only time I ever saw him pissed. And it was just a very, very rare time that it happened. But some little mean little prick out there would throw at him. And it was always the veteran. So those are things I observed as a young kid.
I want to ask you a couple of broadcasting questions, and then I got to ask you about Seinfeld. I know you're doing a podcast. It's called Shea Anything. Great name there. The old Mets ballpark, Shea Stadium, Shea Anything. Clearly, you love to talk about baseball. So I would imagine a podcast would be perfect for you.
Yeah, but I haven't got the time for it. But I do it for this. This is part of my SNY gig. Yeah. And, you know, Doug Williams is a very good moderator, asks great questions. And it's really like a weekly wrap-up.
Right.
So, of the Mets. So, I don't mind it. But I couldn't do a podcast daily.
Right. And in terms of the Mets, you know, obviously they had the great season when they went to the World Series against the Royals. But outside of that, you know, the Mets are not – when the Mets are bad, it's not just that they're bad. There's always seems to be anarchy going on with the Mets, you know. And that not always their fault and not always – you know, who would have thought Matt Harvey, Syndergaard, all injured. Who was the third – there was another pitcher in that little class with them.
Well, Wheeler had Tommy John, so –
But there's always, there's, I mean, in New York, I'm a Yankee fan, so it's not something I deal with constantly, but you can feel the hatred Mets fans have for the Wilpons. They're trying to be sold. Does that ever weigh you down when you're trying to be a broadcaster, or are you just like, I go there, I call the game, I leave, and that's it?
I go there and call the game. I don't get involved what's going on in the periphery.
Right.
I focus on doing the best broadcasts and bringing the best knowledge of my baseball experience into the front rooms of the people that are watching. And it's frustrating. The Mets have had a very checkered past. There's no question. The Yankees always seem to find a way to win. I mean, for what the Yankees did, as far as after that Jeter era, where they had that great run and everybody got old at once. And I said, this is going to take them 5, maybe 10 years. They didn't skip a beat. And that's a credit to the organization.
And helps when you could spend a lot of money.
Well, but they get a lot of people coming up with talent. They do a good job. They got
The Gleyber Torres trade was great for them.
So when the Nets win, it's great.
Right.
You know, and you know, we'll see. I happen to like this team right now. I think we're going to win the division, to be honest with you. But I think Atlanta's banged up big time.
Right.
I'm not a Philly fan. I've never been a fan of that team, but the talent that's there. Washington is never going to replace third Rendon, although that Soto is some kind of hitter. My God. He might be the best hitter I've seen come down the pike in a long time. I mean, this kid is just phenomenal as a hitter, and it just amazes me. They're so young to be able to do what he's doing.
Yeah,
but I don't think that they're there. They're getting older, and I think this team is ready to win. And if we can just get our pitchers healthy,
yeah.
But you know, the Braves are banged up. They got their key players hurt. It's a 60-game run here.
Yeah, and a lot of teams are going to make the playoffs, so that helps everybody too. Do you think A-Rod would be a good owner for the Mets?
I don't think he'd be a bad owner. I think that he would. I think he'd probably, with J-Lo, would probably bring more of a celebrity element to Citi Field. I mean, what the Dodgers did when they were bought out by Hollywood, and just Dodgers were very traditional. know, the organ music, classic baseball, you're in a cathedral. Now they got a comedy act out there before the game. The music's blasting loud. It's completely changed. I think that's what's going to happen with if A-Rod's group takes over. And if it's as long as it's the team wins, it's all that matters.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see how involved he gets in terms of, you know, personnel and stuff.
I think he'll get involved.
Yeah.
I think he'll be deeply involved.
Interesting. Can you ever do an interview without someone asking you about the Seinfeld appearance?
It happens once in a while. What do you got for me?
I mean, I'm just a duck. Well, you've talked about, obviously, I mean, you had the all-time cameo on that show and, you know, you've talked about it a billion times. Is there anything about that, those two episodes you did? It was a two-parter from...
It was the one episode, was an hour, it was then on Sweep. They show it in two now.
Is there anything we don't know about that appearance? Is there anything, any nugget you've never shared, anything from being on Seinfeld that, you know, we would need to know?
Well, the one scene, Wayne was great.
Newman.
So yeah. He's a huge baseball fan. And a historian, too. I was surprised when he did the scene in the Jerry's apartment where he got all worked up and riled up. And I was standing when he walked out the door, the front door. It's just a prop. And I was standing behind there and kind of looking through a little crack. And when he came through the door and making his exit, I was right there. He opened the door, and there I was. And he was practically frothing at the mouth because he was playing that, and I had a frenzied a scene, which I thought was great. And he looked at me and laughed. Yeah. And
when you read that script, did you know this is a pretty great episode?
No, what did I know about that?
Okay.
Yeah, no. I just knew I had a lot of lines, and I better learn them.
Did do you have any kind of relationship with Jerry now?
Jerry's out here, and I know in East Hampton, but he's got his family. He's got his own life. Yeah. I very rarely see him. Even when he's at the ballpark, we always like to get him in the booth once a year. And it's always fun when we have him for a couple innings. We have a blast. Let him call the game. We talk. I don't see him otherwise, no.
And I would assume you had to have some good interaction with Larry David, who was the producer.
Larry was very involved in that. The one thing that sticks out to me, I was very nervous. I'd never acted before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'd never taken a lesson. I'd never crossed my mind. This is what falls in my lap. My very first experience. I'm a guest star on an hour show that they're going to use on Sweeps. Right. So the one scene when I said I'm Keith Hernandez in the car, they had convertible or car. They had a camera on the hood. They had two cameras stuck on the side of the car, and they had a camera in the trunk so they can shoot different angles. And they had a boom over our head, mic.
Right.
And so it came down to the scene where I'm supposed to say I'm Keith Hernandez. And I said, well, Larry, how would you want me to say this? And he was over by the, with the camera, looking in the camera where the director was. And he looked at me and I said, how do you want me to say it? And I said, you do my line right now, how you want me to do it. And you have that mic ready and I'll just mimic you. And as soon as you're done, I'll skip a beat and I'll say it just like you said it. So it was Larry that said that I'm Keith Hernandez. And I skipped the beat and I said it. And Larry said, no more takes. Perfect. So that's how that happened.
That's great.
Yeah. Because I didn't know. I was a little shy.
Yeah.
I'm not an actor.
Right.
So I got to act like a big, you know.
Yeah.
It was a great concept, that whole episode.
Seinfeld wasn't Seinfeld when you were on the show. It sort of became, you know, the cultural phenomenon, I think, shortly after, you know, seasons 3, 4, 5, especially.
Larry said that the first year the show didn't take off.
Right.
Even Jerry told me this. they knew coming in that they had a good script, and it was, and they had, they wrote the extra scene subplot, which was George collecting unemployment and then dating the unemployment woman's daughter. They had that scene written. That was the extra scene. And that would have made it the hour. So it was all, they didn't tell me. They told me after it was over that it was all on how I stood up.
Oh, wow.
If I was terrible, they were only going to use it for a half hour. And sometimes in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
But they, Larry said that that you were the best guest star we ever had. And he said, our show, we felt, he said, I felt that after that sweeps week, that the show took off after that episode. Yeah.
That episode has, I know I've seen, you know, I've watched every episode a million times. The hardest I've ever laughed at any Seinfeld scene was in that the last scene of that episode when George comes running out of the bathroom with his pants at his ankles screaming, save Vandalay Industries, save right. Vandalay Industries. I don't know what it is. I'll never forget the first time I saw that scene, and I could not stop laughing at that scene.
There were so many good things in that. Michael Richards was pretty much all the characters were basically what you saw on the screen, but when they said lights, camera, action, they elevate their personality. Mm-hmm. So Michael Richards is really a little spacey.
Yeah.
And he didn't know anything about baseball. And he followed me around quite a bit when he wasn't on the set. It wasn't his scenes to do when he had time. And he just asked me questions about baseball and my life. And not questions about the game, questions about my life off the field, what was it like. And so he was very coming from a different plane. And
yeah,
it was one of the great experiences of my life.
When was the last time you watched that episode?
Oh, I can't even tell you. I get so embarrassed. I've only watched it maybe once or twice.
Really?
Two or three times. I get embarrassed.
But have you watched all the Seinfelds? Like,
no, I hardly have maybe seen a handful.
This is a bombshell. Only a handful.
Yeah, I wasn't a TV watcher.
Yeah. Can we get you to watch Seinfeld? It's the greatest show of all time. You were on the greatest show.
I have the whole. I mean, they sent me the whole damn thing. So
you've only seen a handful of episodes. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. All right. Well, this is great. The Seinfeld stuff is just. I mean, that's. It's such a great episode. You did a great job on it. So and I'm a diehard fan. So I had to bring that up. So, I appreciate you coming on and, enjoy the rest of the season here and, enjoy your 2 days off. And, hopefully the Mets give you some excitement this year.
I think they will. And, it was been a pleasure to be on with you. I'm glad actually to be able to talk about this Tatis thing more in detail.
Yeah.
I've had, 24 hours to think about it.
I have to say, it's not just baseball. It's life. No one anymore ever seems to say, I thought about it and I sort of changed my mind on it. And I think when people do say that sometimes, because you see it in politics, sometimes someone may believe in, let's do this kind of tax cut. No, people can change their minds. It's not a bad thing. It's we need more of it, I think.
Okay.
Yeah,
we were on the air. I know when Gary brought it up, we knew we were gonna. We went to commercial break. We knew we were gonna come out and talk about it, on the air. Now I didn't realize that Gary was gonna offer a counterpoint, so I was caught off guard.
Right,
and I didn't really give it much thought. And like I said, I drove home last night. I got an hour and a half drive home.
What do you listen to in the car on the way home? I bet you listen to something interesting.
I listened to John Batchelor on WABC.
Okay.
On the John Batchelor show. I think that show it saves me going home. It's wide ranging. It's politics. It's history. It's book reviews. It's current events. It's just, it's a fabulous show.
Yeah. So you were listening for that. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I was gonna say, if you're listening to FAN, it's everyone calling in to defend Tatis.
No way. No, I've never listened to FAN. Never. Only when I'm in the car and there's a game on.
Yeah.
So now it's 7:10. So.
Yeah. Right. All right. Well, I appreciate it, Keith. Thanks a lot for coming on. And
okay. Hopefully we'll talk. Is this taped or are we live?
We're taped. Well, it'll come out in a little while.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Thanks, glad to help.
I appreciate it. Anytime
you want me back, just call Ellie. All right.
Absolutely. We'll do.
It'll be my pleasure. As the season unfolds, you want me back on? I'm here.
Absolutely. Especially, you know, if the Mets get a nice run, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it. Thank you. Take care.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. My thanks to Keith Hernandez. Really love the Seinfeld stuff there at the end. I cannot believe he has only watched a handful of Seinfeld episodes. That one took me aback and has not watched his episode. That I get. A lot of people don't like to watch themselves, but it's crazy. He's part of the greatest sitcom of all time and has only watched a handful of episodes. If you missed any recent episodes of the SI Media podcast, you can always go into the archives and give a listen. Kyle Brandt from NFL Network was on last week. John Oran from Sports Business Journal on all the latest sports media news was on 2 weeks ago. Jeff Van Gundy 3 weeks ago. Joe Buck 4 weeks ago. All great guests. So if you missed any of those, you can dip into the SI Media podcast archive. Listen to those. Subscribe to the pod if you're not a subscriber. And if you really like it, you can rate and review. All right. That wraps up this episode of the SI Media podcast. My thanks to Keith Hernandez and my thanks to you for listening. We'll see you next week. Take care.